Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yashodanandana Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Thank you.
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Morning. We continue reading from Granta Raja Srimad Bhagavatam. We're Canto 6, Chapter 9, The Appearance of the Demon Vritrasura. And verse 40, which is in prose, so it's not on the board. Actually, I'm not quite sure how you do prose. What, do we do the word for word as well? Or, yeah. No? Okay. I don't know.
It looks like that.
Does it make?
Yeah, no, it's.
Is it on?
Yes.
So the verse goes Tribhuvanatma Bhavana, Trivikrama, Trinayana, Triloka Manoharanu Bhava, Tavaiva Vibhutayo Dittija Dhanujadayascha Api. Tesham upakrama samoyam iti svatma mayaya sura nara mriga mishrita jalachara kritivir yataparadham dandam dandhadara dadartha evam enam api bhagavan jari tvashtram utayari manyase. So the word for word, what would you be able to repeat the Sanskrit one?
Highly doubtful.
Maybe I'll just read the word for word and then you can listen. So, Tribhuvana Atma Bhavana. O Lord, you are the shelter of the three worlds because you are the super soul of the three worlds. Trivikrama. O Lord, who assumes the form of Vamana, your power and opulences are distributed throughout the three worlds. Trinayana. O maintainer and seer of the three worlds. Triloka Manohara Anubhava, O you who are perceived as the most beautiful within the three worlds. Tava, of you, Eva, certainly, Vibhutaya, the expansions of energy, Dittija, Dhanuja, Adayaha, the demoniac sons of Ditti and the Dhanujas, another type of demon. Cha, and Api, also, in brackets, the human beings. Desham, of all of them, upakrama samaya, the time of enterprise, I am this, iti, thus, svaatma mayaya, by your own energy, sura, nara, mriga, mishrita, jalachara, akritivi, with different forms like those of the demigods, human beings, animals, mixtures, and aquatics, in brackets, the incarnations, Vamana, Lord Ramachandra, Krishna, Varaha, Hayagriva, Nrisimha, Matsya, and Kurma. Yata aparadham, according to their offense. Dandam, punishment. Dandadhara, O supreme chastiser. Dadharta, you award, evam thus, enam, this one, Vritrasura, api also, Bhagavan, O supreme personality of Godhead. Jadi, kill. Tvashtram, the son of Tvashta, Uta, indeed, Yadumanyase, if you think it proper. And if you put all of that together, you get something like this. O Lord, O personified three worlds, father of the three worlds, O strength of the three worlds, in the form of the Vamana incarnation, O three-eyed form of Nrsimhadeva, O most beautiful person within the three worlds, everything and everyone, including human beings and even the Daitya demons and the Danavas, is but an expansion of your energy. O supremely powerful one, you have always appeared in your forms as the various incarnations to punish the demons as soon as they become very powerful. You appear as Lord Vamana, Lord Rama, and Lord Krishna, You appear sometimes as an animal like Lord Boar, sometimes a mixed incarnation like Lord Nrsimhadeva and Lord Hayagriva, and sometimes an aquatic like Lord Fish and Lord Tortoise. Assuming such various forms, you have always punished the demons and Danavas. We therefore pray that your lordship appear today as another incarnation, if you so desire, to kill the great demon Vritrasura. Purport. There are two kinds of devotees known as Sakama and Akama. Pure devotees are Akama, whereas devotees in the upper planetary systems, such as the demigods, are called Sakama, because they still want to enjoy material opulence. Because of their pious activities, the Sakama devotees are promoted to the higher planetary systems, but at heart, they still desire to lord it over the material resources. The Sakama devotees are sometimes disturbed by the demons and the Rakshasas, but the Lord is so kind that he always saves them by appearing as an incarnation. The Lord's incarnations are so powerful that Lord Vamanadeva covered the entire universe with two steps, and therefore had no place for his third step. The Lord is called Trivikrama because he showed his strength by delivering the entire universe with merely three steps. The difference between Sakama and Akama devotees, Sakama being those with desire, Akama being those without desire, is that when Sakama devotees, like the demigods, fall into difficulty, they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead for relief, whereas Akama devotees, even in the greatest danger, never disturb the Lord for material benefits. Even if an Akama devotee is suffering, he thinks that this is due to his past impious activities and agrees to suffer the consequences. He never disturbs the Lord. Sakama devotees immediately pray to the Lord as soon as they are in difficulty, but they are regarded as pious because they consider themselves fully dependent on the mercy of the Lord. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tatenu kampan susami shamanam unjana evadam kritam vipakam hridvam vapurvir vidadhan namaste jiveta yomukti pade sadaya pakam. Even while suffering in the midst of difficulties, devotees simply offer their prayers and service more enthusiastically. In this way, they become firmly fixed in devotional service and eligible to return home back to Godhead, without a doubt. Sakama devotees, of course, achieve from the Lord the results they desire from their prayers, but they do not immediately become fit to return to Godhead. It is to be noted here that Lord Vishnu, in his various incarnations, is always the protector of his devotees. Srila Madhvacharya says, Vividham bhava patra tat sarve vishnur vibhutaya. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, Krishna is through Bhagavan Swayam. All the other incarnations proceed from Lord Vishnu. So, Tribhuvanatma bhuvana, Tribhuvanatma bhavana, Trivikrama, Trinayana, Triloka manoharan bhava. Tavaiva vibhutayo aditi jadam jadayas chapi tesham upakrama samayoyam iti svatma mayaya sura nara mriga mishrita jalachara kriti vir yataparadham dandam dandhadara tatharta evam enam api bhagavan jali tvashtram udi utta yadimam yase. O Lord, O personified three worlds, Father of the three worlds, O strength of the three worlds in the form of the Vamana incarnation, O three-eyed form of Nrsimhadev, O most beautiful person within the three worlds, everything and everyone, including human being, and even the Daitya demons and the Danavas, is but an expansion of your energy. O supremely powerful one, you have always appeared in your forms as the various incarnations to punish the demons as soon as they become very powerful. You appear as Lord Vamanadeva, Lord Rama, Lord Krishna. You appear sometimes as an animal, like Lord Boar, sometimes a mixed incarnation, like Lord Nrsimhadeva and Lord Hayagriva, and sometimes an aquatic, like Lord Fish and Lord Tortoise. Assuming such various forms, You have always punished the demons and dharmas. We therefore pray that your lordship appear today as another incarnation, if you so desire, to kill the great demon, Vritrasura. Om Agyana Timarandasya Kyana Janashadatya Chakshura Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Mukham Karoti Vachara Angum Nagayate Yad Kripata Maham Vande Shri Guru Dinatara Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayucha Patitana Pavanekyo Vaishnavekyo Namah. This section of the Bhagavatam has always been one of my favorites. And particularly when Manohar Prabhu asked me to give class and I was reading the verse after that, the purport, I distinctly remember this purport the first time I read it. And this whole section really, because it's quite a wonderful passage. And the reason I like this section of the Bhagavatam is because the Bhagavatam does here best what the Bhagavatam likes to do. And we get this very fantastical story. If you dig into your minds a little, your memories of the preceding chapters of this canto, what happens is that Indra offended his spiritual master Brihaspati, who happens to also be his priest and the person who does the yajnas for him. He was too infatuated with his opulences, and one day when Brihaspati walked in and Indra was sitting on his throne, Indra is of course the king of the gods, and he was sitting on his throne, and the Siddhas and the Charanas and all these celestial beings were praising him. He was sitting there with his wife and he was sort of enjoying his kingly position, and Brihaspati walked in, and Indra did not get up to offer his respects. And Brihaspati was offended by this and thought Indra's behavior was inappropriate. And so he left, he disappeared, and shortly after that the demons attack and the gods lose dramatically. They're conquered, and they realize it's because Brihaspati is left. They have no priest to guide them anymore. And so they're in a bit of a difficult situation. They've been defeated by the demons, and they decide we need another priest. We need another person to lead us, to do yajnas for us. And so they approach Brahma, and Brahma says, well, why don't you go to Vishvarupa and ask him to become your Brahman? And so Indra approaches Vishvarupa. He asks him to become his priest. And soon after that, they conquer the demons again, and everything seems very fine until Indra realizes that Vishvarupa is doing something that's not very nice. And while he's making the yajnas for the gods, he's also making some little offerings to the demons on the side. And Indra is of course very upset by this, and in his anger he kills Vishvarupa. He kills the priest. And now Vishvarupa's father, Toshta, is not very happy about this, as you can imagine. His son has just been killed, and he decides to seek revenge, and he conjures up this huge demon. He performs a sacrifice and invokes this great demon to appear, who is called Vritra, the Bhagavatam says, because Vritra means covering. Because when he appeared, he became so huge that he covered all the worlds. He covered the entire universes. You can sort of imagine sort of his shadow is cast over all the worlds. And so this huge, very powerful demon appears. And the gods get together, start attacking this demon, and very quickly their armies are crushed. Their older weapons are powerless, and they realize we cannot do anything to defeat this demon. And so what they do is they decide to approach the Lord, and they pray to the Lord, and we've been reading the prayers so far. But today's verse is actually the first request they make of the Lord. All the prayers before this have been stuti, have been praise, have been in praise of the Lord, describing the nature of the Lord, the nature of the world, and the nature of ourselves. But now they finally say why they approach the Lord, and this will continue in the following verses. Now, why do I like this story? Why is this story so interesting? It's this story of Indra and Vritra is the story in the Rig Veda. It's the story that in all the four Vedas, this becomes the main story. It's Indra's fight with Vritra. And in the Rig Veda, Indra, whenever Indra is mentioned, he's often mentioned as being Vritragna, the killer of Vritra, or the enemy of Vritra. And it's the story is often invoked in the Rig Veda to show the supremacy of Indra. Indra defeated this demon who threatened the existence of all the worlds, the well-being of all the worlds. And it's always in that context that this is mentioned. And then it's always linked also to yajna, to sacrifice. Because you perform yajnas for, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if you perform yajnas, you get rain. And of course, the rain comes from Indra. And then from the rain comes, you know, the opulence of agriculture, of good crops and so on. But in the Vedic text, Vritra is said to stop this. He's often described as a great serpent, sort of compared to a great serpent who within his coils has trapped all the waters. Because as long as he's ruling, there's no sacrifices that are being performed to Indra, and so that the world is all in turmoil. Now, the Bhagavatam takes this story and does what it likes to do, and it does it really well. And it's not a story. I mean, you can read the story, these chapters of the Bhagavatam, as being about this great fight between Indra and Vritra, this very epic story. But really, what the Bhagavatam is doing is it's teaching you about bhakti, and it's doing it in a very extraordinary way. And we'll see this particularly now from this verse onwards. We'll see that all the prayers of the demigods to the Lord and the Lord's response is all teaching us about bhakti. And the real surprise, of course, for someone who would have studied the Rig Veda and then for the first time reads the Bhagavatam, the real surprise will come at the end of the next chapter when you find out that Vritra is actually not he's a demon, but he's actually a great devotee. And he starts preaching to Indra about devotional service. And at the end, he has beautiful prayers to the Lord, which some of the acharyas say that the last three verses of Vritra's prayer, according to Vallabhacharya, are some of the most important verses of the whole Bhagavatam. And so this is the way seen, this story. And I suppose we'll get to those verses in a month or so. But they are extraordinarily beautiful and very profound. And so, is this really a story about Indra fighting Vritra, or is this really teaching us something about bhakti? The Bhagavatam often uses all these stories that are found in other texts in order to drive home a particular point, which is the importance of bhakti and the supremacy, not of Indra. In the Rig Veda, Indra kills Vritra, and the Lord is not mentioned, his involvement is not there. But here we find out, well, actually, yeah, Indra did kill Vritra, but he did run to the Lord for help, and it's only because he approached the Lord that he was able to accomplish what he did. And so it's sort of the praise of Indra that is there in the Rig Veda is sort of a little diminished here in the Bhagavatam. Now, what do the demigods ask of the Lord? They approach him, and they start with calling out to the Lord in various ways. And so, first they say, "Tribhuvanatma Bhavana." And we'll see that each of the names or the ways they invoke the Lord can be read in different ways. And Prabhupada, as he often does, gives various interpretations of all of these in the word for word and in the translation. He kind of is bringing really together the different commentators, the different acharyas, their views. And so, Tribhuvanatma Bhavana, you who are the Bhavana, the abode or the shelter, as well as the Atma, as well as the Paramatma, the Supreme Self, the Supreme, the Super Soul, of the Tribhuvana, of the three worlds. And so Prabhupada says, O Lord, you're the shelter, the Bhavana of the three worlds. Why? Because you're the Atma of the three worlds, because you're the Super Soul of the three worlds. And in his translation, he says, O personified three worlds. So he goes a step further in the translation. So the Lord is the shelter, and because he's the shelter, he's the home of the three worlds. The three worlds exist within him, therefore he's the personified three worlds. And he's the father of the three worlds. Bhavana can also mean the generation. And so he who causes the generation of the three worlds is therefore the father of the three worlds. Viraragavacharya, Sri Vaishnava commentator on the Bhagavatam, makes a very nice point actually. He sees the different invocations as making each a particular point. And so it says, Tribhuvanatma Bhavana, you who are the shelter of the three worlds, or you who are the personified three worlds, or you are the father of the three worlds, implies that you're everywhere. You're existing everywhere in these three worlds. And then the Lord is invoked as Trivikrama. And Prabhupada in the word for word, he says, your power and opulences, your vikrama, are distributed throughout the three worlds. So Trivikrama, your powers, your vikrama are in the three worlds. And Viraragavacharya says this means that the Lord can do anything. He's present everywhere, and he's omnipotent. He can do whatever he wants to do. And then it says, Trinayana, you who have three eyes, which Viraragava says means the sun and the moon, which are well known as the eyes of the Lord in the Vedic text. And the third eye is fire. It's that, the other thing that illuminates this world. Prabhupada explains the world is dark and we need the illumination for this world, and the illumination is Krishna. And so you who have three eyes, meaning the sun, the moon, and the fire, meaning you are aware of everything, you see everything that's happening in the world, you can perceive. And so not only are you everywhere, not only are you omnipotent, but you also are aware of everything. Therefore, please help us. You know our situation, and you're able to do something about our situation very easily because you are everywhere, so therefore please help us. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds a little, sort of has a different reading of Trinayana, which Prabhupada incorporates here as well, where he says Nayana can mean the eye, but can also mean the leader, or that which leads, that which guides. And so it's you who guides the three worlds. And therefore Prabhupada says in the word for word, O maintainer, or guide, or sustainer, or and seer, and you who have the three eyes of the three worlds. But there's something else also happening here that they're already alluding to in those three invocations they make to the Lord, which Prabhupada brings out in his translation. And Trivikrama is of course also a well-known name of a particular form of the Lord. Upendra or Vamana is called Trivikrama because it's Trivikrama means he who has three steps. And so Prabhupada translates in the translations, he says, Trivikrama, he translates as O strength of the three worlds. That was the first reading we had. But then he adds, in the form of the Vamana incarnation. And in the purport he comments, he says, the Lord's incarnations are so powerful that Lord Vamanadeva covered the entire universe with two steps, and therefore had no place for his third step. The Lord is called Trivikrama because he showed his strength by delivering the entire universe with merely three steps. And similarly, Trinayana, you who have three eyes, Prabhupada says, both three-eyed form of Nrisimhadev. So Nrisimhadev has three eyes because he's ugra, he's fierce, he's ferocious. And so a lot of the very fierce and terrifying forms have three eyes. And so what they're alluding to already is what they'll state more explicitly in the remainder of the verse is that in the past you have appeared in various forms as Vamana or as Nrisimha to help us, who are the gods in our fight against the demons. Vamana came to regain the kingdom for Indra the kingdom of the universe that had been conquered by the demons and was ruled by Bali. And Nrisimhadev similarly came to kill Hiranyakashipu, who similarly had terrorized the gods and conquered the entire world. And so they're saying, please help us, please appear in a form to help us, as we'll see, they'll say later. But they continue, they say, that Triloka Manoharanu Bhava, which Prabhupada translates as, oh, you who are perceived as the most beautiful within the three worlds. And so they say, if you appear, this will not just be good for us, but this will be good for everyone. Everyone will become attracted. Everyone will be happy with your appearance because you're the most beautiful in the three worlds. And therefore, please appear, and there will only be good if that happens. Now, why do they want the Lord to appear? They want the Lord to appear because Tavaiva Vibhutayo Dittija Dhamajadayascha Api. Because even the Dittija and Dhamaja, even the sons of Ditti and the sons of Dhan, which are the two classes of demons, the Daityas and the Dhanavas, even they are Tavaiva Vibhutaya, are your Vibhutis, are your opulences, are your processes, expansions of energy. And at the end of his purport, he quotes Madhvacharya, who says, Vividam Pavapatra Tat Sarve Vishnu Vibhutaya. Why are all these beings said to be the expansions of the Lord's energy? Why are all these beings said to be the opulences of the Lord? Even the demons, who act against his desires, who are not devoted to him. Madhva says, Vividam Bhavapatra Tvad, because they're the receptacles of his bhava, of his existence. The Lord is present in them, Vividam, in various ways. And therefore, sarve, everything, Vishnu Vibhuta, is an opulence or a manifestation of Krishna's energy, because Krishna is present in some ways in all of them. And therefore they say, in the past, Swatma Maya, by your own energy, by your own potency, by your own divine potency, you have appeared as Sura, as a god, in the form of Vamana, who appeared as the younger brother of Indra. He's Upendra, he's the younger brother of Indra. As Nara, as a man, Prabhupada says, Lord Krishna and Lord Ram, they both appear as human beings. As Mriga, as a beast, as an animal, like Varaha, as a boar, it's a wild beast. Or Mishrita, as a mixed form, like Hayagriva, who's half man, half a horse, and Narasimha, who's half lion, half man. Or Jalachara, or as a fish, or an aquatic animal. It's probably as Lord Fish. Matsya actually just means fish, so it means Lord Fish and Lord Tortoise. And so you've assumed all these forms in the past to help us, so now please help us as well. Please appear in one of your forms to help us defeat this huge demon Vritra that we're powerless to do anything against. We've tried. All our armies are crushed, our weapons are useless against them, so please come and help us for the benefit of the world. And they say, Yataparaham Dandam Dandadaya Dadharta. So you are Dandadaya, you hold a danda, a stick for punishment, the rod for punishment. And therefore, please punish this demon, yathaparadam, in accordance with his aparada, in accordance with his offense or his transgression. If that wasn't clear enough, at the very end of the verse, they say, Pavaram jahi tvashtra, please kill jahi, this tvashtra, this son of Toshtra. And then they add at the very end, Udiyadimanyase, if you so desire. Now, Prabhupada in his purport, he immediately starts, he says there's two types of devotees. There's devotees who are sattvama, devotees who have material desires, and devotees who are akama, who have no material desires. And this becomes, he returns to this point in the coming verses. And as you'll see, he's sort of anticipating Krishna's response. Krishna will respond in a particular way, and he will say a few things at the end of the chapter, which is what Prabhupada is already alluding to here. And so we have two types of devotees. We have devotees who desire nothing from the Lord, and we have devotees who desire something from the Lord. And we know from the Bhagavad Gita that there's four types of people that desire something from the Lord that approach him. We have the artha, the one who's distressed, the one who's suffering. We have the jigyasa, the one who desires, who's inquisitive, who desires to know. We have the artharthi, the one who desires wealth, the one who desires to become rich. And finally, we have the jnani, the one who's in knowledge. And each of those persons approaches the Lord with a particular motivation. They want something from the Lord. But Krishna in the Gita still says they're sukritin, they're still pious, and he distinguishes them later from those who have material desires but do not approach him but approach the various demigods to fulfill their desires. And there's a big difference, he says, between them. We'll come back to that in a moment. And here in the purport, Prabhupada says, why are they pious? Why are those that approach the Lord with material desires pious? He says, they are regarded as pious because they consider themselves fully dependent on the mercy of the Lord. And so that's their great quality, that they realize the demigods have been trying to fight Vritra. They've come to the realization, we're powerless here. And the only one that can help us, the person on whom we are fully dependent, is the Lord. And so therefore, they're requesting the Lord to help them is a sign of their full conviction that they cannot act in this world, at least in this situation, on their own. They're fully dependent on the Lord for his grace. And this is a wonderful thing. This is a really wonderful quality that they have. Whereas Krishna in the Gita, a few verses later, after he's listed the four types of devotees who approach him wanting to get something out of their worship, he says, those whose intelligence has been stolen by kama, by desires, they worship other gods. Meaning those who approach the Lord for material things, their intelligence is not fully being stolen by material desires. And there's a distinction that he makes here. And the key is in the last line. He says they approach the demigods for the fulfillment of their material desires. Prakritya because they're controlled by their own prakriti, by their own nature. And so they approach the demigods for their support, but what they get is basically what they are. Whereas if you approach the Lord, you get something more, because the Lord can guide you. The Lord is beyond this world, and is therefore not trapped in the cycle of rebirth and karma and all these things that we have in this world, and the net of desires, and therefore they can rise above that. Prabhupada here says that when the devotees approach the Lord with a particular desire, the Lord fulfills it. Later, in a few purports later, he actually says, actually the Lord does not always fulfill it, and often he does not fulfill it, and that's for their benefit. And as we'll see in a moment, the Lord is actually not going to fulfill their request here. but that's for their own good. Now, what's the difference between those, the devotees that have material desires and the devotees that have no material desires? Prabhupada says here, the devotees that have no material desires, they will not ask for the Lord's help if they're in difficulties. Because they realize that the Lord, as their opening prayer says here, that the Lord is aware of everything, and the Lord is capable of doing anything, and the Lord is guiding this whole world, has the best interest in mind. Therefore, I do not need to ask the Lord for anything, because the Lord is aware of my difficult situation, and if He wants to help me, He will help me. But I think, as Prabhupada explains here, the devotee that has no material desires thinks, the situation I'm in here is due to my own offenses, due to my own karma, due to my own bad activities of the past. Prabhupada often said that the devotee, when he cuts his finger, thinks, I should have lost my hand, but the Lord has minimized the suffering because He's kind. And so this is the conviction of those who have no material desires. They realize that whatever is happening to them, it is the grace of the Lord. As the Christians say, what the Bible says, the Lord giveth, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. So whatever the Lord does, whether He gives or He takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. It's the mercy, the grace of the Lord, whatever happens. And so this is the firm conviction of the pure devotee. There's a Kulashekhar Maharaj, he beautifully prays, he says, Bhavyam bhavatu bhagavan purva karman rupam. That whatever is supposed to happen according to my past karma, according to my own activities, let that happen. I don't care. This is not why I worship you. Let whatever is supposed to happen, let it happen, but let me just worship you. Let me just be able to fix my mind on you in whatever situation I end up in. He makes very clear in the Mukundamala, even if it means I end up in hell and suffer tremendously there, I do not care, because that is just in response to my aparadhas, my offenses and my bad misdeeds of the past. But let me just be able to fix my mind on you. And so here in the verse, the demigods, they say, yataparadham dandam dandhadaradadharita. So dandadar, O punisher, O you who wield the rod of punishment, please punish this one for yataparadham, in accordance with his offenses. And the pure devotee would think like that. I would think that whatever painful situation I'm in now, this is yataparadham. This is in accordance with my own aparadha. And therefore, there's no point in me asking for the Lord to help me, to lift me out of this, because this is already His grace. This is already His kindness upon me. But we see the demigods understand this quite differently. They think it's His aparadha. So please punish him, Vritra, for in accordance with his aparadhas. And it's quite telling that that's how they're thinking. And it's quite telling sort of the contrast that Prabhupada makes in the purport here between the devotees who think whatever happens to me is due to my own misdeeds, and the demigods who think, please punish this guy over there who's done a lot of bad things. Because if we have material desires and if we have attachments, we look for the fault in other people. We blame our suffering on circumstances. We blame it on you know, the world did not understand me, therefore they did not give me prestige, and therefore I became poor. Or the suffering was caused by this person who mistreated me, or I was mauled by a bear, and it's the bear's fault, and things like that. Whereas the person who's detached and who has actual knowledge sees that the Lord is in control of everything, and the Lord is kind, and the Lord is graceful, and therefore whatever happens to me, if I've given my life to the Lord, whatever happens to me is due to the kindness of the Lord, whether it's happiness or distress, whether it's heaven or hell, it's the Lord guides me, and that is the conviction, and therefore whatever happens, it's yatapara, it must be due to something that I've done, but in a very minor way. The retribution I get is very small in comparison to my great offense. Now, in a few purports later, Prabhupada writes, he says that still when a devotee who has material desires approaches the Lord in order to fulfill the desire they have, he says they become almost pure devotees in their distress. And it's quite a beautiful passage. It's in verse 44 in the purport there, Prabhupada says, when the demigods are utterly helpless, they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead in grief and with tears in their eyes, praying to the Lord, and thus they become almost pure devotees, free from material desires. Admitting that they have forgotten pure devotional service because of extensive material opportunities, which they will mention later, they fully surrender to the Lord, leaving to His consideration whether to maintain them or to annihilate them. Such surrender is necessary. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Marabi Rakubi Joicha Dohara. O Lord, I fully surrender to your lotus feet. Now, as you desire, you may protect me or annihilate me. You have the full right to do either. And so Prabhupada explains that even though they have material desires, because they're in such a precarious situation, their despair is so great that when they approach the Lord, they almost are pure devotees. They still have material desires, so they cannot be pure devotees, but their expression and their surrender is so complete that one can almost consider them pure devotees. And we see this in this verse. At the end, you have this Uto yadi manyase, if you so desire. And it's not kind of a little sort of catch at the end that, oh, by the way, you know, this is what we want, but you know, if you want this too, you can do this. But it's actually, as Prabhupada explains in that purport a few verses later, this is actually very profound. They approach the Lord and they say, this is what we desire, but ultimately it's up to you, and we are surrendered to you. We give ourselves, we place ourselves in your hand. And now if you want, we would like you to kill Vritra, but if you desire to let Vritra kill all of us, that's okay. If you desire, so whatever you desire, we will submit to that. And so we sometimes speak negatively about devotees who worship the Lord with material desires, which I suppose is what it means. We speak negatively about a lot of us, at least about me. But Prabhupada here, in these purports, continuously highlights the difference between devotees who have material desires and who have no material desires. And he wants to make it clear to us that there is a big difference between them. But he's also repeatedly saying, still, the fact that they approach the Lord, the fact that they consider themselves fully dependent on the Lord, even if they have material desires, makes them great. And this is wonderful. And we should acknowledge this. And so it's a good thing. And so therefore, they're not condemned. They're not the persons who approach the demigods for material benefits. They are the demigods, of course. They have no one else to approach, I suppose. But they're not like those people who worship various demigods for their own satisfaction, who are prakritya niyatasvaya, who are controlled by their own nature. But they approach the Lord, and gradually through that, they can become free from their material desires. And therefore, the Bhagavatam very emphatically says that akama, whether you're a devotee that Prabhupada is talking about here, that has no material desires, or sarvakama, or if you desire everything, if you desire to anything in this world, or mokshakama, if you desire to go beyond this world, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam, you should worship the Lord. It's an injunction that you should do this. You should approach the Lord with whatever desires you have. And as Prabhupada, as I said earlier, Prabhupada later on in his purport, he says, Krishna doesn't always give what you want, but he gives what is good for you. And when the Lord will speak to the demigods later on, Prabhupada explains this. He regrets that the demigods did not approach him and said, please give us bhakti. The Lord will speak and he will say that, you know, what you've asked, okay, you know, it's something nice, but I don't give whatever people want. I give what is good for people. And so I'm not going to appear. And as it turns out, as the story progresses, you realize that the despair of the demigods that they feel having been defeated by Vritra is actually not warranted. And earlier, Prabhupada has already hinted at that in purport earlier in this chapter. When Vishwarupa, when Vashtu, the father of Vishwarupa, conjures up Vritra, he recites a mantra and he invokes a demon who will be Indrashatra, who will be an enemy of Indra. Now, in Vedic Sanskrit, there's accents which you don't have in the sort of the classical Sanskrit that you have in the Bhagavatam and the Gita, but there's accents that are important in the recitation. And anyway, I won't get into all the details here, but yeah, one of the accents is the Uddata, is the raised and the pitch, and where you raise the pitch. Now, if you have a compound and the Uddata accent is on the first part of the compound, it means that the compound becomes what they call a Bahuvrihi compound. Which means, normally Indrashatra would mean the enemy of Indra, but if the accent is on the first one, it becomes he who has as his enemy Indra. And so basically what turns out to be the case is that when Tvashtar invoked Vishvarupa, invoked Vritra, he kind of made a mistake and he conjured up a demon who would be killed by Indra. And so the demigods are in this situation where they've tried to kill Vritra and they realize they cannot do anything, so they approach the Lord, and kind of as the story progresses, they realize actually we could have done something about this because this being was destined to be killed by Indra. And so their situation is not quite, and so their requests for the Lord to appear in another avatar, in another incarnation, is all based on wrong knowledge, which is so often the case with our prayers when we approach the Lord and we have this conviction that I want this, I want this, I want this. This is the only thing that will help me in this situation. And then you pray to the Lord and the Lord, Krishna doesn't give it to you, and later on you realize actually if I would have gotten that, I would have been very good and actually could have, it was solved in a much better way and so on. But it's often the way we do things, and I think Arjuna in the Gita exemplifies this very well. Arjuna approaches, he's in this suffering is mental rather than physical at that time. But he's in great anguish and great despair, and he approaches Krishna and he says, Shishastheham Tvadi Shadi Mantvam Prapannam. Please teach me. I become your disciple, and I'm surrendered unto you. And I don't know what to do. I don't know whether I should fight. I should not fight, or so on. But two verses later, he says, "Nayoga, I will not fight." And so he surrenders to the Lord, but he still says, "You know, so please tell me what to do, but I'll still not fight." And this is often our own situation where we approach the Lord, we say, "We're surrendered to you, but I want to die, you know, sir, because that's really not, this cannot be proper." But we see Sir Arjuna gets through this whole transformation that at the end of the text he says, "Karishya Vachananta, I will do what you have taught me to do, I'll do what you tell me to do." And so this is the demigods too, they're going through this process, they're approaching the Lord, they think they know what is best for them, and the Lord will tell them, actually, I know what's best for you, and this is not what is best for you, I will not appear, but here's a way you can get out of this difficult situation, you just do that and you'll be fine. And on top of that, of course, we'll see that Vritra, yes, he's a great demon, but he's also a great Vaishnava, he's a great devotee, and he will be preaching to Indra, he'll be praying to the Lord, he'll exemplify in an extraordinary way the nature of pure devotional service. And so their situation is a little, is in a way, is sort of, well, in many ways, it's created by themselves. It's Indra offended Brihaspati, which led to all this, but then also because of their lack of knowledge, they end up in this asking for the Lord to do this. Anyway, in the coming days, you'll be reading the following verses and then see these themes develop. Prabhupada returns to these themes again and again, and then you'll see that this is what the Lord is teaching himself when he appears. But I've said enough, so I'll end right here. I'm actually over time, so.
That's okay, you can ask questions. Nobody speaks to it anyway.
There's a very stern warning here.
I just wonder about the demons. Does it mean that, let's say, I have lived many, many lifetimes, does it mean that I, at some point, have been a demon also?
No, we see people in the Bhagavatam, there's a lot of incidents where various people become demons for a while due to various reasons, often because they're cursed or because they've committed an aparat and they become demons. The most famous example is Jaya Vijaya, who were cursed by the Kumaras. They're the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha, you know, what to speak of. What could happen to just a mortal being in this world, and they're cursed to become reborn three times as demons, first as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasha Purana and Kumbhakarna and Jarasandha and Shishupala. So we might have been demons according to the Bhagavatam, we've been in this world without a beginning, and so we've had this long series of lives one after the other that we cannot, you know, possibly want to trace all our births. So we've probably been in one of the many life forms that there are at some point in that period, and we've probably by now experienced everything there is to experience in this world and in all the different life forms. So, yeah.
Because Krishna Bhagavad Gita says again and again, I put them in the lowest forms. So it seems like completely, how would they ever evolve?
Krishna's comment. Because we see, you know, someone like Shishupala, was delivered, someone like Putana was delivered, someone like the old demons Krishna killed, they were all delivered, and they it's said that Putana became a nurse and attained the extraordinary blessing of becoming a personal associate of the Lord, and Shishupala, when he was killed, the Bhagavatam says he attained he became a personal associate of the Lord again. Of course, he would become Jaya or Vijaya, I forget which one again. But so Krishna is kind, so he does help. He does intervene and does do things. And also, Prabhupada often emphasizes that there's Krishna and there's the devotees. And the devotees, we know we have someone like Prahlad, who's born as the son of a demon. As the son of the demon, the king of all the demons, and yet is praised as one of the Lord's greatest devotees. Why? Because of Narada, because Narada Muni taught the Bhagavatam to his mother while she was pregnant of Prahlad, and Prahlad heard the instructions while he was in the womb, and that transformed him, and he became, one of the greatest devotees of the Lord, whom we praise every day after Mahavarti, for whom the Lord appeared in an extraordinary form. So, there's hope.
I'm not sure you can say that Prahlad was transformed, because he says he was sent into the world.
Well, there's different stories actually about it. In Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami cites some Purana, which says that Prahlad was not a very nice person in his previous life, but he did one good thing which caused him to be born there and receive the teachings of Narada. So there's conflicting accounts there.
It seems to me that this dilemma of whether to pray to the Lord when in difficulty or not is rather difficult to reconcile, and there are various examples where I can conclude one way or the other. So Prabhupada in this purport was quite explicit. But I've had a reflection on this because we've discussed this already in previous classes, and to me, most appealing was, and personal for myself, was the example of a father and child in trouble. And when child is in trouble, regardless how he got into trouble, if child asks for help, father is very enthusiastic to help. Whether he asks or not, he will be enthusiastic to help. But even more so if child helplessly calls, help me, I'm in trouble. So I was in this sense trying, projecting this logic to Krishna also being enthusiastic. It's also mentioned as one of the six principles that the devotee is always confident that Krishna will help. But let alone my own personal reflection and meditation conclusions, we see examples of, for example, Draupadi, which in a way reached out to him, help. I exceeded my own ways to fight the trouble. And even if you doubt her highest purity and level of the purity, we see in Krishna Lila, practically speaking, all residents of Vrindavan beginning with his sakis and so forth to the growing ups, they at different times they helplessly reach to Krishna, and I guess there is no doubt of their purity. And so how do we put this all in?
Yeah, elsewhere I should say, Prabhupada does say that even pure devotees ask Krishna for help. But I think one of the dangers for us, I suppose, if you have material desires and you're not entirely pure, should you ask the Lord for help or not? Because you have material desires and you have attachments, you should ask the Lord for help. Because if you don't, you will look for it elsewhere. And Draupadi kind of exemplifies that, where initially she's holding on to, she thinks, I can deal with this, I can hold on to, sort of pull my sari back. And then she realizes she can't, and she surrenders to Krishna and says, she basically lets go and says, okay, it's in your hands, whatever happens now. And Krishna steps in and helps him. And because the thing is, the difference between the two is that those who have no material desires, they're not attached to whatever situation they're in. And so Indra is losing his kingdom here. The story begins with Indra being the king and being surrounded by people who praise him as the king. And then he offends Brihaspati in the process, and this kind of all comes about. And in the process, Indra loses his kingdom twice. And he's attached to it, to his position of his kingdom, and he wants that. Whereas Prabhupada is saying, a devotee who would not have material desires, they would say, well, whether I'm a king or not, does it really matter? Whatever the Lord wants to happen to me, that's okay with me. And so it's not that they don't, when they're in distress, they don't search, they don't look for support with the Lord, but rather they don't see this as distress in a way. Ultimately, they see this as the grace, and that's what he says. They see, well, maybe Krishna, has something better in mind for me than being a king. It's actually sort of good that I lost that position. And so it's a very different mentality that they have, and therefore they look upon the whole situation very differently, and therefore they feel there's no need to ask for anything. It's not that they say, well, I really want to ask, but I'm not going to ask because I am a pure devotee and I have no material desire, therefore I'm not going to ask. But rather, they don't feel the need to do it because they're fully convinced that the Lord is already helping them. Whereas the demigods at this point, they don't see that. They almost see that, you know, the Lord has to appear. The Lord has to appear to come and help us. Whereas, in a way, what Krishna is teaching them is, I've been there all the time. And the fact that Tvashtra mispronounced his mantra, well, that was my doing there. I was helping you there. And you praise me as, you know, the Tribhuvanatma Bhavana, being present in all the world. Yeah, actually, I'm present in all the world. And I'm Trinayana, and I see everything that's happening. So don't worry. There's no need for you to worry. Does that sort of...
There is also, as you were speaking, I recall that Srila Prabhupada somewhere saying that devotee in devotional service, when he encounters difficulty, he can, as ultimate resource, he can approach Krishna and say, my dear Lord, this is the position, you know, like that. So, and kind of he leaves it up to him.
Yeah.
But still, in context of what we're saying, being always present and seeing everywhere, there is no even need of doing it. But nevertheless, you know, I was also thinking about this. If you just simply suffer, and you know Krishna can help, and you only need to do just say, you know, okay, help, I need help in this situation, in connection with service, you know, like that, I would rather see it almost as if some kind of, you know, imagine somebody suffering, he knows next to him somebody can help like this, and it's like very, very kind of impersonal thing, you know, or I will suffer here, no matter what, I will never ask Krishna. It really feels a little awkward. I know, but that's my personal, you know.
No, that's why, you know, but that's because there's attachment, and that's, you know, there's something, and therefore Prabhupada says, you know, it's good, the fact that the demigods approach the Lord in their suffering is good, and in their suffering, when they approach the Lord with tears in their eyes, and they're desperate, and they approach the Lord, he says that they become almost pure devotees, because they have this thing that, this clause, what is it? Utayadi Manya say, if you so desire, and they say, you know, we're in this very bad situation here, things are not going as we planned, and they might even realize, you know, well, this is because of our stupid arranger, might realize, well, I shouldn't have done that, what I did, you know, back then. But yeah, here we are, I'm powerless to do anything, and I approach the Lord, but it's still up to the Lord to do it. And that's the saving grace. It's still the same. They're still saying, you know, this is what we want, but ultimately it's up to you. And so please do as you see fit. But the Lord, anyway, I don't want to get tracks on too long. But we'll see. The Lord will respond, and he will kind of say, well, you could have asked for something better. And I think that's often the experience we have, where we approach the Lord for help with something, and we're convinced that this is the best thing that could happen to us. If the Lord would only take this away or that away, or give us this or give us that to alleviate our suffering, and then when he doesn't do it, we realize, actually, yeah, maybe it was good we didn't get this, because see the good things that came off this, and the Lord was taking care of us even when he didn't give us what we wanted. So anyway, we'll end here. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.